7, 10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Immerse, the podcast and book. We are delighted to have you join us. Immerse is produced by Charlie Morrow, Sean McCann, and Bart Plantenga for Morrow Sounds, Vermont, and Helsinki. And Recital Edition, Los Angeles.
Here we go. Okay, so this is Charlie Morrow for Immerse.
Sound, light,
space, 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 space. Our entire Immerse book and podcast project was initially sparked by astrophysicist educator Kutun Yu's essay, A Brief History of Immersive Experiences Before Computers. Kutun Yu is the curator of space science at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. After receiving his PhD in 2000, he joined the museum in 2001 as part of a team that was commissioned to create planetarium software for the Gates Planetarium that would allow visitors to visualize the known universe. He has performed educational research on the utilization of digital planetariums to the teaching of astronomy, and has uncovered ways in which immersive environments are beneficial for students. He has also created numerous planetarium shows as a universe maker and conceptualist. Maya-Lena Remes and I met Kutun in Denver around 2002 while he was working on immersive content for the Gates Planetarium. Since then, he's contributed to our sound and animation exhibit for the Canadian Joggins Fossil Cliffs Museum and our sonic journey called Land, Sea, Air, Sonic Journey from 400 Million Years Ago to the Present and Beyond. That was exhibited in New York and London. It's wonderful to have Kutun as our guest today. Well, it's good to see you.
How have you been, Charlie? Yeah, it's good to see you.
Well, I'm delighted we could chat. Everything well over at your end there?
Yeah. I've just been extremely busy. Have multiple projects. So in addition to working on yours, I have a storytelling one that I'm putting together. And I have another one based on an Immersa talk that I gave earlier this year.
Oh, lovely. I'm interviewing you today for my book, Immerse, where your articles of lovely research is, since this is a podcast as well as a book, I wanted to interview you and ask you two questions.
Okay.
One is how immersivity is part of your current practice, what you're doing that's concerned with immersivity right now. And then the other is a timeline, a book's based on talking to people about their current practice and then how did they get there, or going backwards, so to speak, down their project or thought ladder. Which would you prefer to begin with?
Let's see. I think what I would do is, let me pull up my write-up. Yeah, so the first question is, how is immersivity baked into my current practice? Well, I guess let's just go ahead and get started. And what I'll do is just give you a little bit of background about myself. I'm an astronomer by training. I have a PhD in astrophysics, and I got into the realm of immersivity via the Denver Museum of Nature and Science when I was hired to help create planetarium software. I was a scientific visualization programmer, and that led me on the path of just thinking about how you can use planetarium domes effectively. Digital planetariums at that time were a relatively new phenomenon. And, people weren't quite used to or didn't quite understand all the different things that you could do with it and all the different ways in which this new medium was different than traditional planetariums. The fact that you weren't locked to a geocentric perspective of the sky and that you weren't even locked to depictions of the sky. You could show anything that you wanted within this hemispherical surface. And in some ways, you know, planetariums and flight simulators were precursors to many of the virtual reality technologies that we have today. And actually, the planetarium technology is derived from earlier virtual reality technologies. And so I got into doing educational research involving the digital planetarium, trying to understand how you can use it to effectively teach astronomy. But I also got involved in using the dome to create compelling experiences for our public audiences, not only in astronomy, but also in earth sciences and earth systems sciences. So while I was doing all that, I also got to thinking about what historically led to that particular moment in time where digital planetariums were possible or became possible. And so that's when I started doing research into different immersive art forms, preceded what we think of, you know, today. We think that immersivity means you need to have computers, you need to have computer graphics, and be able to use projection technology to create visual content. But the more I dug into it, the more I realized that that's not really the case, and that people were attempting to and achieving immersivity within the constraints of their culture and the technology that was available going back many hundreds, if not thousands of years. And of course, even understanding that history, how does that relate to my current practice? That became a little bit more difficult because you can compile all of this information, put it into a timeline, but you know, how do you use the past to inform what you're doing now? And that was actually a question that I couldn't answer for many, many years. And so, you know, originally I started working on this historical research at least 12, maybe even 15 years ago. And it was only until you contacted me, Charlie, that I got back into it. And over that time, you know, I've done my educational research work and done a lot of my programmatic activities involving the dome. And so doing all that and having much more experience with this gave me enough context to help me figure out how this history is useful for today. And I think the answer for me is the fact that we see this today where people are trying to create immersive experiences that have greater fidelity. You know, you have more channels of audio, you have higher resolution imagery, you can go to higher frame rates. There's lots of different things that you can do to create immersive experiences. But people in the past didn't have a lot of the same tools that we have. They obviously couldn't create the same levels of fidelity to reality that we can today. But can you really argue that, you know, people in the past didn't have compelling experiences from either being immersed in frescoes or paintings or via traditional film? And then you can also find examples where very dedicated inventors like Morten Heilig, you know, was creating very early virtual reality rides, and he had put together patents for immersive theaters that go far beyond anything that we currently have. But he had a lot of trouble getting funding for his dream projects. And I think this has to do with the fact that, let's say, so I think when you examine this history and you see even today that even though virtual reality has gotten, you know, a lot of exposure, there are a lot of companies putting billions of dollars into content and technology development, but the initial wave of interest hasn't led to widespread consumer adoption. And I think that has to do with the fact that there is a certain level of okayness with how realistic a medium has to be. And so the public seems to be okay with the HDTVs that they have and other experiences that they have, but they don't feel like they need that extra level of immersivity that virtual reality requires just because it's awkward to put on a headset that completely cuts out all of your surroundings. There are lots of issues with current virtual reality that are problematic for people. So I think, you know, until you have really compelling content that drives people to adopt this new technology. And right now, that content isn't quite there yet, or at least not to overcome the resistance of the new technology, the resistance of the fact that the new technology is difficult to use. Means that it might take a few more years for VR or augmented reality or mixed reality or whichever version on these types of computer augmented immersive realities, you know, whatever becomes widely adopted. So I think there is something interesting in this historical context, you know, that can teach us today. So I think, you know, what I found was that just looking back at the history and combining that with a better understanding of what is happening today has led me to think about, you know, how much I can push what I do in my preferred field of digital planetariums, and thinking about, you know, how I also have to concentrate on having compelling stories to make a compelling experience for our audiences.
Well, thank you. You've answered both the questions in the same.
Okay.
I really like that. And, you know, I think that the point that you make is an important one, that it does come down to the story. As a storyteller can immerse you completely in a story just by, you know, the old image of the campfire telling stories. So it doesn't seem to change even if the technology gets more advanced. It's in a way, it's about engagement. Stories have a way of engaging you over time that create experience over time. And I mean, I think experiences, I'm sure you know that some experiences are incredibly deep and they're 1 second long. Mm-hmm. Others have to be sustained for a long time before they give their ghost up. But all of these topographies and time dimensions, you know, can be rigged to create that experience.
Yeah, and you know, campfires was not something that I wrote about in the chapter, but I do start off going back 30,000 years to European art in European caves, you know, done by early humans who had arrived on the scene and were creating some of the earliest masterpieces of artwork ever known. But more recently, I've discovered that there are researchers looking into the effects of telling stories around campfires, and the fact that, you know, anthropologists have examined how hunter-gatherer tribes, the stories that they tell during the day when they're out working or, you know, gathering food or during other tasks that you normally find during the day, versus the tales or the stories or the accounts that they tell in the evening after the day's work is done and they're seated around the campfire, and the two are completely different. And so you might be complaining during the day about, you know, someone who isn't pulling his or her weight around the camp or the village, but in the evening, the story, it actually goes into more traditional storytelling, where some of the stories might be mythical, some of them might be religious in nature, and some of them might, in some ways, you know, be attuned to what I'm trying to say is, but all of them seem to take much more expansive look at, you know, the tribe or the people involved. And so they still might be critiquing the people who are not pulling their weight around the village, but they're doing it in terms of a moral that's part of another story, as opposed to directly critiquing these people. And so it seems like, I mean, just based on this type of research, storytelling, you know, has probably been important for millennia, tens of millennia, but it also serves really important roles in society, even in very early society.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that, and I appreciate your involvement. But thank you. I'm going to jump, but I'll write you about it because you're the inspiration for the book. And I thank you very much for your work, because you're moving back there. If I don't know if I've ever sent you my biography, but my whole life's work has been based on working forward in some technical way and then jumping back in history. It's just this sort of a cycle that leads to jumping back in time, and it happened to me in a number of ways. You know, I have that in my opening essay, because I think that we've been on the same path, and I just would never have been inspired to make all of this come together if you hadn't been on the path ahead of me. So I appreciate your being a pathfinder.
Yeah. Well, that's really nice to hear. Thank you very much, Charlie. I mean, I don't know what to say, but it's nice to know that I've inspired someone. So.
Well, it's true. Have a good evening, and thanks for today.
Yeah, have a good night. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. This is Immerse, the podcast and book. Immerse is produced by Charlie Morrow, Sean McCann, and Bart Plantenga for Morrow Sound, Vermont and Helsinki, and Recital Edition, Los Angeles.
And then, an empty shell fall back into space.